People want buy-in. People want to feel empowered. People want to feel invested. People want to feel like they're part of something. And when they do, we think you get more discretionary effort, that idea that you might go above and beyond. So I know whenever we ask a group of people, think of a leadership trait of a leader that you've known, that you admire. It is the same list we get every time. It's caring, it's pushing me, it's challenging me, it's believed in me, it's showed an interest in me, it knew about my family, it's trusted me, it's all of that piece. And it all sits in the dynamics. No one ever says they're a technical genius, or they're the best salesperson, or they're the best footballer I ever saw. It just never gets mentioned, the mechanic side of things. And yet, still to this day, a lot of sporting teams, a lot of corporations promote based on the technical ability. Hi, I'm Daniel Healy, partner at Leading Teams, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Focusing on pharmacy management and ownership, the PBCN podcast supports the improvement and growth of your business performance with insights and advice from a range of industry professionals. The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way.
Company culture is not just about providing perks like ping pong tables and team happy hours. Many businesses focus on their numbers, the systems, the processes, and the KPIs to achieve success. However, focusing attention on the culture, the relationships, and the behaviours of your team will have a direct and positive impact on the results of your business. When company cultures are particularly high-performing, they can impact all corners of your business. Increased engagement, productivity, and retention are all outcomes of a high-performance work culture. Today, we speak with Daniel Healy, partner at Leading Teams, about what makes a good leader, why culture is important to a business, and how leaders can create and influence a good culture. Here's Daniel. Daniel Healy, welcome to the show. You're a partner at Leading Teams. Tell us a little bit about you and what Leading Teams does.
The model that Leading Teams is based on was founded 26 years ago now, 92, 93, in Adelaide. And I guess I enjoy telling the story because I have a link to that. So I love the fact that I can connect up with that. A fellow by the name of Ray McLean, who is our founder, was working at the RAF base in Edinburgh in South Australia. And he was working for the Air Force and training pilots in leadership. And he was doing it very differently to what had been done previously, with a very autocratic way the armed services had traditionally worked, and was getting some great results. And he decided, he'd been ex-teacher and then got into the Air Force, and he decided this was his world and he wanted to make a living out of this leadership development, this cultural change piece that he'd stumbled on and could see some really great results with. Problem was he needed someone to trial that with outside of that world, and he was lucky enough to stumble on a footy coach at Central Districts Footy Club, which was a footy club that I was a 19-year-old just starting out with down the road in the South Australian Footy League, and that was Alan Stewart. And they met, and our footy club had had 30-odd years of existence with only one final win and been fairly unsuccessful and not a great reputation around the competition, and Alan Stewart was keen to change that. So they got together between the two of them, and we started out on a pilot program for Ray. And I, as I said, I was part of that journey, and a 19-year-old on a camp that we went to Palmer in the middle of nowhere in South Australia and did it pretty tough, but also started asking some of these questions about what was our culture like and how we wanted to be seen and what we were like at the moment and what were the gaps and what do we want to do about it. And it just made sense to me from the start. I guess I had a fair bit of evidence then. In the next couple of years, we were lucky enough to, I say luck, but I don't think it was luck, to make a grand final, our first ever grand final for the club 2 years later. And for me, it was based on this work that Ray and we'd done. Then I got drafted, lucky enough to get drafted to St Kilda in the AFL. And anyone who's listening and has followed the AFL will know they haven't had a great run of success over history as well. And what do I know when I get there? Ray is already there, and that's the first AFL club he was working at. And 2 years later, again, we were able to jump in and make a grand final. So I guess I had some really strong evidence that this stuff worked. I've then been a teacher and a footy coach through the early 2000s after the Saints gave me my marching orders. But all the time I was really passionate and believed and used this model in everything I did. And 5 or so years ago, I decided that this is where I want to be. And here I am back at Leading Teams as a partner. And so Yeah, fundamentally, I guess, to answer the second part of your question, we are about helping teams and individuals improve their performance through focusing on the culture and the dynamics of the organisation more so than the mechanics or the task part. And if you think about Ray 20-odd years ago, I always joked that culture back then would have been something that grew on yogurt. It wasn't talked about like it is now. And for him to take that leap, and he talks about the amount of letters and cold calls he made back then to businesses, to sporting teams, and wasn't getting a lot of love back. And I guess I'm always very thankful that he was able to forge the road he has, because it's certainly a lot easier now and in corporate world that people realise that this stuff isn't just a gimmick, or it isn't, you know, soft fluffy, that it actually does help and it is pivotal to team success. So, yeah, always very thankful of what Ray was able to do.
I'd like to come back to the synergy and the connection with sport. That comment you made just there around the corporate world realising that this isn't just a gimmick and it is important. I want to pose the age-old question. I say age-old because we ask it all of the time, and that is, what makes a good leader? And I'm particularly interested, if you think that's changed much over the years. You used the word gimmick before, but has that changed much over the years in terms of what people think makes a good leader?
I'm not sure anyone would have asked people. I think that's the fundamental difference. That was Ray's point. He, in the Air Force, he couldn't understand how, when we were rating leaders, we had someone sitting on the side doing a tick and flick. He figured if you want to know how the leader was going, you would ask the followers. And that's where this whole feedback mechanism that we are, is a pivotal part of our work, began. So I'm not sure people asked what they actually wanted in leaders. And I think traditionally the world was fairly full of autocratic leaders, do as I say, and hell, there's still probably plenty of them out there now, and a lot of them have had great success. So I guess I think more and more, we think more and more that as the generations go, that people actually, I think it would have worked a lot better then too, to be honest, but people want buy-in. People want to feel empowered. People want to feel invested. People want to feel like they're part of something. And when they do, we think you get more discretionary effort, that idea that you might go above and beyond. So I know whenever we ask a group of people, think of a leadership trait of a leader that you've known that you admire, it is the same list we get every time. It's caring, it's pushing me, it's challenging me, it's believed in me, it's showed an interest in me, it knew about my family, it's trusted me, it's all of that piece, and it all sits in the dynamics. No one ever says they're a technical genius or they're the best salesperson or they're the best footballer I ever saw. It just never gets mentioned, the mechanics side of things. And yet, still to this day, a lot of sporting teams, a lot of corporations promote based on the technical ability. It's a really interesting situation. I think slowly it's changing, but this idea that, you know, the best salesperson becomes a manager when they actually don't have any of those leadership skills at all. So for us, really, leadership is about influencing others by your behaviour. And fundamentally, I don't think that's changed forever. I think leadership styles are changing slowly as people realise there's a better way of doing things.
You talk about buy-in and power. People want to be invested and have ownership, some of those great characteristics of leaders, and that their job is to influence others. It starts to, or is coupled to culture. And we hear the culture word used a lot. And most of us, we know when we're in a good culture and we know when we're in a bad one, but we might not know what it really means and able to clearly define it. Can you do that for us? What is culture exactly?
It is a good one, and you're right. We ask that question a lot, and people go straight to what you said. Oh, it's when we feel good. I said, no, you're describing a good culture. What is a culture? And often we get, you know, the feeling, the vibe, Mabo, and that sort of thing. And there is a bit of that, but I guess we keep it pretty simple at Leading Teams. For us, culture is the way we do things. Culture is the behaviours that we reward, the behaviours that we accept. I worked with a group of people a couple of years ago, and it's a story I tell. And we were due to start this session. It was about 12 in the group, and we were due to start at 9:30. And at 9:30, there was two people in the room, and I was one of them. And there was a young lady in the room as well. And I just got talking to her, and I said, you know, how long have you been in the business? She said, this is my first day. So she was the only person in the room at the starting time. Now, we ended up starting at 9:45. Clearly, whether the sign on the wall said they were a professional group or not, what they were telling this new staff member was, we don't value time that much. Now, if she's got half a brain over time, she's going to start pressing the snooze button on the alarm clock or going to get in a coffee, which is probably what they were doing. the reality is their culture, whether they liked it or not, what they were showing that lady was their culture is they don't value time, they don't value meetings. They would have told her in theory that their culture was very different. That would have shown her a set of values. They would have gone through all their induction process. But on a Friday night at the end of the first week at a new workplace, when you go to dinner with your partner or go to the pub with your mates and they say, what was your workplace like? The answer to your question is going to be based solely on what you see. And that is the culture of the place.
Values is a really key word there. And people talk about how a good culture makes them feel. Is why culture is important in organisations, is it really obvious or is it deeper than what most of us just initially or maybe superficially think?
For someone like me who has always thought like this and has always seen it from a very young age, I guess it's obvious. What we work out more and more as we work with teams, it's not as obvious to other people. And I'm talking really smart, highly successful executive teams. They just don't know what they don't know. But certainly on the flip side of that, there is this subconscious awareness that we don't like what we're seeing here. The challenge isn't so much people recognising, it's being able to do something about it, feeling helpless to actually do something about it. And that's where we talk about the language around weight of numbers and having senior influential people driving the bus or behaving in a way that allows others to follow them. One of the sayings we would use is the signs of great leadership are in the behaviour of the followers. So when leaders want to sit around and bitch about what's going on below them, unfortunately, they have to own what's going on below them. They are the reason what that's going on below them. And normally and ironically, if we were in that group with the subordinates, they would be having that same bitch and whinge about the people above them.
You mentioned before about people not describing a great leader as always being the most technically proficient. They weren't the greatest footballer or the best salesperson or even the best pharmacist in the industry. How is culture relevant, though, to pharmacists who are highly educated and skilled people in what they do?
Yeah, it's interesting. I spoke to a group of fourth-year pharmacists recently and I didn't want to waste an hour and a half of their time, so I asked that at the start. I said, why the hell am I here? Because I'm to hear about leadership and culture. And I said, I've got a mate who owns a pharmacy and he's writing scripts and, you're very technically minded. I was really pleased, and I think it's a great initiative that the Guild have done. They were able to say, well, because we hope we're going to be running a store in 10 years' time. We're going to have staff and we're going to lead people. And then we had some people, some more senior people in the room who are recruiting and looking at their graduation certificate or their mark sheet because they know they've graduated, they know they've got the skill. They want to know what sort of person they're bringing to the table because it's a good question. There's the mechanics and the dynamics. We're not saying people can't walk into a pharmacy and just dispensing prescriptions with no skill. They have to have proficiency there. But Richard Branson's line about recruiting on attitude and training them up, this idea that have a certain amount of skill level, but it's the dynamics, it's the culture, it's the genuine conversations that's going to drive that performance. So we can have some really skilled pharmacists, but if the dynamic's not right in that pharmacy, that business is not going to be as successful as it could be.
If we have a strong culture, what are the general outcomes that we can expect? And even we spoke about it earlier, even when we say strong, we normally imply a good culture, but we could have a strong negative or a strong poor culture, and that would have certain outcomes as well. What can we expect?
Well, if we do look at strong cultures in a positive sense, we unashamed people see this culture as, again, the soft skills, the HR, the warm fuzzy stuff, and there absolutely is a strong element around culture, around building trusting relationships. But the end result for a good culture is improved performance. Now, when we walk into a corporate group, and they are, for me, I unashamedly say, we'll put dollar sign up there. People don't want they want to shy away from that conversation. The culture drives your performance. When my coach, Alan Stewart, 25 years ago, got Ray in to help us at Centrals, it wasn't so we could go home to our wives and parents and say what a lovely bunch of boys they were to play footy with. It was so that we could win and improve and ultimately win a premiership. Same, no different to walking into a pharmacy. We are there to help achieve our purpose. Now, for most footy teams, achieving a purpose is to win a premiership. For a pharmacy, there'll be dollars involved, but I'd like to think, and I asked some of the kids at the talk I did recently Sorry, I say kids. They were fourth year students, but they're like kids to me. That I asked them what would be close your eyes 10 years time you own a pharmacy? What's your purpose? And some fantastic answers. You know, to improve the lives of those around us, to provide care for the people of, you know, whatever state they're from. And I love those answers. So the answer to your question, the culture piece will help you achieve that purpose, whatever your purpose is. And again, for us at Leading Teams, our purpose is to improve individual and team performance. We think the culture, along with the mechanics, allows you to do that.
So we have a good understanding of what a good culture might look like. Most of us listening will know how it makes us feel. You speak about goals and having an idea of where we want to go and what those outcomes are. What about the middle part? What are some of the things or the elements that actually go into it day to day, year to year, that contribute to creating a strong, positive culture?
So you're right. If we start with, and I should have put it up front, it's getting people to buy into a clarity of purpose. So we're all on the same page as to why we're here. The story around JFK going to visit NASA in 1962, 7 years before man set foot on the moon, and he ran into a janitor and he asked the janitor what he's doing, and he said, "I'm helping put man on the moon." Now, someone, and it was a leader at that organisation, had got this janitor who was cleaning toilets 7 years before Neil landed on the moon to convince him that he was a part of something bigger. Now, if you picture that janitor, you're picturing someone who's giving effort over and above. So that's your purpose piece. Now, your day-to-day bit then is the idea that you have an agreed framework of behaviour of how you all want to live. Now, when I say agree, that's the pivotal bit. Rather than, again, old school CEO or the owner of the business saying, this is how we're all going to behave and act, and you'll get most people falling in line, you'll get a few people trying to find their way around it, and you'll get what you'll get. The idea of the agreed framework is everyone in the room, everyone in the organisation says, yep, that's how I want this place to look. I'm going to buy in and I'm going to sign up for that. Doesn't guarantee everyone's going to do it all the time because we're human. What it does is allows a framework along with some relationships for us to be able to have these genuine conversations and to say, you know, Daniel, you did a bloody good job there the other day. Well done. That's exactly how we want it to be. Or, hey, remember we agreed we were going to turn up to meetings on time. So you can then challenge the behaviour in a way that's framed around something we agreed on rather than attacking an individual or ignoring the behaviour because you just don't want to challenge it. So we feel that having that framework, having some trust and respect in the relationships allows us to have what we call those genuine conversations, which are obviously designed to help improve that performance.
It's clearly the right way to do it, is for everybody to have buy-in and ownership and the agreed purpose. So where does a leader actually fit in to that? What role do leaders have in creating a culture? Is it just down to leaders that are installed, so to speak, because of where they sit in the organisation? Or is it just down to them to make it happen? Where do they sit in all of that?
I guess I'll go back to that quote I said earlier around signs of great leadership and the behaviour that follows. They are the fundamental piece in the puzzle. They need to drive the hell out of that behavioural framework. And when I say drive the hell out of it, the number one thing they need to do is model that behaviour. They need to be the cast. So when we work with sporting teams, leaders get voted, and they get voted not on their ability, not on how many games they played, not on how many best and fairest they've won. They get voted on the who trusts them to live those behaviours under pressure. So I always throw that to the corporate world and said to an exec team, how would you go if this place had a vote like the footy team? Well, now those people have been put there because some of them have got, they've got, you know, money in the company, so they might be partners, they might have started the company, some might just be appointed as an exec member. How would you go if we voted on our behaviours? The best organisations, the people who get voted right up front, would be those people sitting in leadership roles, because once that happens, everyone else says, well, I'm happy to buy in this because I can see, you know, my leader behaving the way that they say that we want us to behave and the way we said we want to behave. So I'm going to fall into line. And then you get a huge weight of numbers. Of course, you don't get everyone on board, but it's so much easier to see the difference between those who are on board and those who aren't. And those who aren't tend to behave their way out of the organisation. They often don't have to be moved on because they realise that this place ain't for them. And that doesn't make them wrong. It just makes them wrong for that organisation. But in an organisation where leaders aren't able to drive the behaviour like that, people can get away with behaviour that's counterproductive because no one wants to pull it up. Leaders certainly don't want to pull it up because they're doing it themselves. And that's when you get the disenchanted people who may have been willing and able, who drop away in their interest, who may end up looking to go somewhere else, or often can become quite toxic in your in your business. So fundamentally, the first bit, their job is to model behavior. Then their job is to reward behavior they want to see and challenge behavior that they don't like, that sits outside of their agreed framework.
Again, so we have the agreed framework, the ownership, the buy-in. The leader is modeling it by example, rewarding and challenging it. You touched on the staff and probably the wrong term, you can correct me, but the followers, the rest of the team, what responsibilities do they have when they're not in leadership roles? Are they the ones who also should be challenging people's behavior, or should it be left to the leader? How do they create a strong culture over and above just doing what we said we agreed we'd do?
Followers is a good word. I mean, the number one bit is we do want them to follow that lead. So that we would say, we use bus terminology, we would say that means they're not necessarily drivers of the bus, but they're on board, which is really important. And we need those good, followers with the leaders on board. The next step for them, and this is the interesting bit with the empowerment model that we often challenge teams on, it's okay, you know, the good piece of the empowerment model is you get a say in this framework, you get a say in what you want your purpose to be. But the challenge to you can't have your say and then turn around when the you know what hits the fan and ask the leader to do all the hard work. The downside or the challenge for them is, yes, you get a say in what world you want, but it's also your responsibility to uphold that world by your behaviour, but yes, as you say, by rewarding and challenging others. That's where it gets tough, because peers challenging at each other's behaviour is the tough bit. But that's what the empowerment model is all about. It's up to all of us to uphold the culture we want. Yes, the leaders have to model it. Yes, they have to be the custodians and drive it hard, but we need to follow suit with that. And that's the bit when we get a group really humming, it's because the followers have jumped on board and they become the drivers as well. And a leader almost does themselves out of a job because they're seeing this growth underneath. You won't see that growth unless you allow it. And it does take time and it takes hard work. This is a very, very straightforward model. I often say simple, but simple is the wrong word. It's straightforward, but this isn't simple because it takes hard work.
Is it a case of, if you've got a great culture and, as you said, it's all humming along and the leader potentially, in theory, puts themselves out of a job in terms of having to lead the organisation, when you then turn staff over, does it make it easier for new staff to come into that culture and actually contribute and help the business more quickly than if you don't have a strong culture?
Oh, absolutely. I'm still not sure how this stat was ever measured, but I did hear a stat once that it takes a new staff member 14 days to either rise to the level of what's going on around them or drop to the level. And I don't know how that stat's been worked out, but we would certainly say it's true. If someone walks in, they're going to end up behaving the way everyone else is behaving. It's pretty normal. So in a strong culture where the weight of numbers in the right way, people just get swept along, absolutely. And we hear lots of stories where someone was mentored when they first came in really, really positively. So when a new staff member comes in, they'll turn around and say, "Well, I know what happened to me. I'm going to follow that. I'm going to follow suit." Versus, of course, the other. I was left to fend for myself, so bugger them. That's what we'll do for them. So, 100%. The other piece in that, of course, is if we want to keep that culture, we need to keep recruiting based on attitude rather than recruiting for quick fixes that can sometimes, you know, we've come a long way, we're going really well, so we'll just take this shortcut with this recruiting because we need someone to fill that spot, or, oh, that one looks all right because look how technically good they are. That can be an undoing as well. So we still need to recruit based on attitude and culture, but if we've got a strong one there and we do that, yeah, you're right. It's a lot easier to maintain it and grow it.
You touched on before that people will manage themselves out if it's not a good cultural fit. Before that potentially occurs, or maybe somebody doesn't manage themselves out as quickly as we might hope that they would, what can we do if we have people in our organization who, you know, despite our best efforts with modeling it and rewarding and challenging good behavior, despite our best efforts, just don't buy into the culture, either consciously or maybe they're just not engaged in their job? What can we do about that?
We don't win them all. That's one thing, because this is a very common challenge. When people often say we've done all we can, often we push harder and work out, well, have you really had those conversations? Are they really aware of what's frustrating? Have you asked them why they're behaving like that? That's an often question that's not asked. Have you asked them what you can do to help? Because again, as leaders, it's our responsibility to get them to to behave in the way we want. And if we can't, it sits with us. Either we recruited wrong in the first place or something's gone wrong the way for them to end up like that. And that's hard to hear. And at Leading Teams, we don't get it right all the time as well. We've had people move on and we've had to sit there and read, you know, where did it go wrong? Was it what we did when they were here? Was it the recruiting process? But often people say they've done all they can, but it's still going to be having those genuine conversations, but with a view to solve it rather than the blame mentality. You know, you're not doing this, you must do this. You know, the questions around are you behaving like that? Why are you behaving like that? What can I do to help? What will you agree to do? I guess I always use the language, just be able to put your head on the pillow at the end of the day, knowing you've done all you can to get that person on board. And then after that, there ain't a lot more that you can do. We tend to then focus on the ones that are on board. And as I said, in a really strong culture, often in private enterprise where it's a bit easier, that person will tend to find their way elsewhere. Sadly, in a lot of government organisations, that pressure doesn't come, that environment where people want to grow and get challenged. And so that person can often sit there and get away with that behaviour for a long time.
You've given some really clear ideas and thoughts, almost positioning it to say, look, it's actually reasonably easy if you do some of these things, but we all know it's way more complex than that. And as you rightly said earlier, it is a journey and it can be a long one, and one that you can't just start on and then it just autopilots itself there. As you said, great analogy, we've got to drive the bus. If there's one thing that you would recommend to leaders or implore them to keep an eye on, what would it be?
It would be, despite in theory them all knowing it, actually spend time in the relationship part. Again, if they reflect on what our leader that they knew that they admired, they'll say it was my year 10 teacher because he just cared. He came around and showed real genuine interest to me, or a sports coach, or my first boss because he knew, you know, I was having trouble with my family at the time and he took time to take interest in it. They will always go back, and some people are 60 years old when I ask them this question, they go back 30 or 40 years, and it will always come back to that relationship piece. And when I challenge groups around spending time on that, they generally say they haven't got time. And what they're really saying is it's not a priority for them. And it's not a priority because they aren't able to see the connection between that piece and the actual winning. And so that would be a really strong. Most organisations will have some values set up. Of course, we'd always push them to live them and make them come to life more. But focus on that relationship and understand that that's more important than perhaps what we give it credit for.
Daniel Healy, partner at Leading Teams, thank you so much for sharing your insights and advice on leadership and culture.
Thanks, Daniel. Most welcome.
Awesome chat, Daniel, and thanks again for spending some time with us on the show. It is much appreciated. It is evident that creating and fostering a good culture within your business results in higher performance. As we heard, it is important to set aside time to talk to your team about your business's purpose and think about whether you have an agreed behavioral framework in place. Have a think about whether you have strong professional relationships and whether you and your team are engaging in genuine conversations. If you would like to learn more about creating a culture of high performance, Leading Teams will be facilitating a workshop at this year's APP conference at the Gold Coast in March. The session will form part of the early career progression stream on Friday, the 8th of March, and is open to all delegates, including students and interns. For more information, go to http://appconference.com. Until next time, I'm Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 15 of the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way. For more resources, to access support or advice, or to view this episode's show notes, visit guild.org.au.